This is CBS, Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Dateline Tokyo. Prime Minister Kishida has told his cabinet to increase Japan's defense budget to around 2% of gross domestic product in the year starting April 2027. Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang, my colleague and co-host, is in Tokyo. Gordon, the significance of this, we've talked about Japan as a strong ally of the United States for years. Does this decision by the prime minister surprise you, Gordon? Does it surprise Washington? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. I don't think it's a surprise. The issue is going to be whether Prime Minister Kishida is going to actually be able to implement this. And there are a number of reasons, but nonetheless, his intentions are good.
We welcome Lance Gatling, a principal of Nexial Research based in Tokyo. Lance, it's a pleasure to welcome you to the show. What is your measure of this decision by the prime minister? Is it obliged because of the aggression of China? Was it in train for a long time? Is it a politically controversial, or does everybody go about time?
Good morning, John. The public opinion polls show that about 60% of the Japanese population supports such an active move to increase defense spending. The controversy that does occur, by and large, goes back to the new Japanese constitution instituted post-war with the, I'll say, the help of the general headquarters in Article 9, that in which Japan denies itself the right to make war. So they have since interpreted that over time, over decades, many times, to mean that Japan can maintain the capability for defensive operations to defend itself. And that was in a law in 1957 or so. What is controversial now about the increased defense budget is more so that Japan is looking at buying weapons and developing weapons that allow them to have a counterstrike capability in which they could actually launch an attack, a conventional attack, against an enemy force that's arraying missiles, preparing or flying into Japan's airspace and attacking the country. That's more controversial now than the actual amount. The 2% that Prime Minister Kishida mentions is actually kind of overreported by the Western press, and they're missing some very important elements of that. He's speaking of bringing in the Coast Guard budget into the defense budget calculation. This is in line with U.S. and NATO standards. So since 1976, Japan has had a self-imposed 1% GDP cap on defense spending, but it doesn't include a lot of personnel issues like retirement or the entire $1.5 billion Japanese Coast Guard budget. So it's not exactly as reported, but certainly the aggression of China in the South China Sea gets Japan's attention, since it lives on the sea routes that go through the South China Sea, as well as South Korea does. So some of this is bringing the Japanese and the Koreans closer together, despite the lack of a direct bilateral defense relationship.
Gordon, you have a question for Lance.
Lance, there have been what looks to be the beginning of revolving door prime ministers after Shinzo Abe stepped down a couple of years ago. Does this whole issue of defense spending depend upon who is prime minister, or is there a consensus in the Japanese political system, or maybe I should say a consensus in the Liberal Democratic Party, to increase defense spending and to work on defense issues in a more robust way?
Certainly, Prime Minister Abe's very long period as Prime Minister of Japan and his very strong leadership had a tremendous impact on how the Japanese see defense spending. And they see more and more the popular opinion swung towards the notion that it is acceptable for Japan to have a conventional counterstrike capability. That's going to be embodied probably in a modified Japanese domestic missile and an interim capability of probably U.S. Tomahawk land attack missiles that they would procure and have in hand while they developed their own domestic capability. But Abe's reign as prime minister was very long in Japanese history. Japan tends to have revolving prime ministers, but I think it's actually bigger than him and his own legacy. You know, not only have the LDP behind it, its junior partner, the Komeito, the Clean Government Party, and then there are actually smaller opposition parties that have joined in to accept this new notion.
Lance, I visited Tokyo as a guest of the foreign ministry in 2019 before the pandemic, and in conversations
with very
thoughtful people, I learned that the concern about China was active and extremely, extremely important to everyone, very important. But this is 3 years later. Would you say that it's even more intense now, or has there been a backing off about a concern about China? Where is it, Lance?
No, it has heightened over the time since you were here last. Many elements in the Japanese government, and particularly conservatives, have always been concerned about the role of the CCP, its suppression of its people, the very odd situation that the Japanese find themselves in, where they export about 25% of their total exports to China. They cooperate with the Chinese in many areas, in economic development and production, operation of coal-powered plants. And it's a very important trade partner with Japan. But when China, with this nine-dashed line, has declared the South China Sea and that incredibly important commercial sea route as a Chinese lake, that has to get everyone's attention in Japan. And I think the average Japanese is much more aware of their vulnerability and dependence upon such sea routes than the average American is about any supply source of food or energy.
Gordon, you have a question.
Lance, has the extended discussion about defense capabilities and counterstrike weapons, has that accompanied any reopening of the issue of the Japan possessing nuclear weapons? Or is that so still taboo that this is basically not being discussed in government circles?
The three principles that Japan adopted regarding nuclear weapons, they would neither allow the possession of them, seek the production, or have the capability, has always been at the forefront of their rhetoric. But in private, I would note that the Japanese have 40 metric tons of plutonium. They pursued plutonium fast breeder reactors when the rest of the world had abandoned plutonium as a nuclear fuel source, essentially. They have very carefully continued to develop the technologies needed to have an independent nuclear weapon capability and the means to deliver those. So the discussion does occur. It's very quiet. There are a few people that political canaries in the coal mine that will step up every now and then and say it out loud. But it's certainly not a normal point of discourse. I think it's a healthy discussion that should be had. And I think that most reasonable Japanese will come down on the side of working with the United States under the U.S. nuclear umbrella rather than pursuing their own. But I would also note that I think very carefully they have kept their own options open. And in the past, particularly overly frank, let's say, politicians have mentioned that they believe that they could have their own capability within 18 months of making the decision to do it.
Lance, we just have about a minute. The foreign minister has made it very clear that Japan wants Russia to leave Ukraine. Is that a big public issue? Is that on television every night, the war in Ukraine? We have about a minute.
It certainly is. The certainly the Japanese have a heightened sense of possible threat from the Chinese actions, the CCP's actions in Asia and threatening of small partner countries and trading partners. But also bear in mind that Japan has a longstanding territorial dispute with Russia regarding the northern territories, the islands off the northeast shore of Hokkaido that were seized at the end of World War II, with Japan claiming them and Russia not giving an inch on it. But that is probably completely off the table right now. I think they were very shocked about the actions of Russia against the Ukrainians and the violence and the prolongation of that conflict.
Lance Gatling is a principal of Nexial Research. He is in Tokyo, Japan, as is my colleague and co-host, Gordon Chang, at Gordon G. Chang. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.